Welcome to the Good, the Bad, and the Podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the good movies, the bad movies, and those ugly little movies that you just love to hate or hate to love. I am Micah.
And I'm Charles.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are here to talk today about the Journey film, the Journey movie.
Like the band? Like, Don't Stop
Believing? Would be great. That would be great.
I didn't know they had movies.
I have not seen a Journey movie yet, but they should make one.
I did see the documentary about them, but that's they brought in that new guy. Not that one, though. We're not talking about that.
Just not as good. So what is a Journey movie? It's a protagonist encounters various challenges and characters which either aid to the resolution or aid to the conflict.
Could it also be called a road trip movie?
Yeah, you could think of it as a road trip movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, you've got different stops, you've got different places, you got different people they meet, and they all help out to get the journeyman to the journey.
Okay.
To the destination.
All right.
So, what we do here is that the moderator, which today is me, picks a good movie, a bad movie, and an ugly movie. Today, I have picked for my good movie, and by the way...
For Journey.
For the Journey movie, by the way, Charles and Kelly don't know what I've picked, and they haven't known, and they're waiting on bated breath to know what my good pick is. Now, they have seen all these movies. I have instructed them to see all these movies.
But we don't know which is which.
No, we don't.
Without further delay.
My good pick for a Journey movie is The Neverending Story.
I am greatly surprised by this. I thought that was going a totally different way.
No, totally The Neverending Story, I think, is the best Journey movie.
Okay, so before we get too much into our opinions here.
I just can't even, my mind is so blown right now that
For those out there that haven't seen it, can you give a synopsis for The Neverending Story? I mean, it could be off the top of your head, you don't have to
anything, but... I mean, I've got our trusty IMDb in front of me, but basically, The Neverending Story is about a little boy named Bastion who... He loses his mother. We don't know how he loses his mother. His mother has died. And he kind of daydreams and escapes into the world of books. And he finds this book called The Neverending Story. He skips out of class to go up in some creepy attic and read this book. And there's a boy named Atreyu. And he basically reads about Atreyu's journey to destroy the nothing and to restore peace to this magical land called Fantasia. The movie is actually originally German, and it's made with a completely German crew, but the cast is...
Yeah, it's Wolfgang Peterson actually directed it, right?
Wolfgang Peterson, yeah.
I did not know that.
But
you may be familiar with Das Boot and Air Force One, stuff like that.
Yes. Essentially, Bastion reads and gets really into this book and watches Atreyu go through this journey.
But Atreyu is him, right? Like,
Atreyu
is that a
is
spoiler?
Him.
I don't know.
And this is why it's one of my favorite movies. So here's the reason why. Because you've got two protagonists. You've got Bastion and you've got Atreyu. And they are simultaneously, but not conflicting, protagonists. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Within a story.
Yeah, it's a story within a story, because you've got Bastion, you've got a conflict that's going on with Bastion, which is actually an internal conflict, and then you have the external conflict being represented in Atreyu, where he has a goal,
like
he has a mission.
Heights or something. It's just, if that helps.
That is the direction.
Sure, yeah, that's exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah.
So the external conflict for Atreyu is that he has to find a cure for this girl, the childlike princess. The childlike sorceress. No, empress. The childlike empress. That's what we should call. Mm-hmm. And
this is your favorite movie, right? This is the good one? I'm not sure you actually know anything about this movie.
Best part was when I woke up from a nap.
Oh. The credits are rolling.
So he's going on this journey, and he encounters all these things. To defeat the darkness is what it's called. It's basically a giant cloud.
I thought it was the nothing.
Yeah,
the nothing.
Are you serious? Are you serious right now?
Maybe I wasn't watching this movie after all.
Nobody's going to take our podcast seriously at this point.
Yeah, no. He's trying to find a cure. But what I love is that he is physically going to all these places and he's meeting all these people and he's having to overcome these different challenges. And the overall thing is at the end, the story turns out to be more about Bastion and his internal struggle. And so here, I'm gonna blow your minds. Okay, so hold your hats. You gotta add on, so hold on to it. The childlike empress is actually his mother.
My stomach growled at that. I don't know if you heard that.
Okay.
That was like perfect timing.
The childlike empress actually represents his mother because she says that in the end that the only thing that can cure her, the only thing that can keep her going on and Fantasia going on is if he says her name. Now he opens the window and it's storming and he yells something, and I was doing some research and there's a big debate on what he yells.
It is rather unintelligible.
It's unintelligible.
In fact,
what
I had the closed
yells.
Captions on and it just says yells. It doesn't say words.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. But I think he yells his mother's name, his deceased mother's name. We never know his mother's name. But I think he yells his deceased mother's name. And basically what it is the nothing represents death. Okay, so the nothing is coming. It's consuming his childhood. It's consuming, you know, all this pain. And he can't move on. The story can't go on until he accepts that pain. And he accepts, you know, that his mother is gone. There's nothing he can do about it. He's a Treyu. He was just, you know, doing everything he can, but he can't save his mother. So sad.
Interesting.
But that is why I like it, because it's so deep.
Because it's about death and
it's about
mother.
Death. It's about death.
Oh.
And a lot of characters die in it. The horse dies. I mean, the horse dies.
I know that
how freaking sad was that when you were 6 years old?
That is a really sad part.
He's like, he's pulling on him. He's going, come on, Artex, you stupid horse, come on.
What about
the thing is, you don't even see the horse die. The next scene, he's holding...
What does the wolf with the green eyes represent?
I don't know.
If you remember, he did say in one of the scenes towards the end of the movie that he was the agent of the nothing or the disciple of the
right.
nothing or something. So if you're saying that the nothing represents death, then... You know, the creature with the green eyes could just be one of death's minions coming to carry out his
cancer. I guess I'm cool with metaphors in movies. I don't know if I really like this film all that much. I think is it not ridiculous at the end, him riding Falcor through the streets and like chasing those three kids down, and that's how this movie ends? Like,
that's his imagination. He's still a child.
So that's an imagined scene? That's not actually happening?
No, I don't think that's actually real.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's imagining it. He's imagining over.
Well, that was like his wish at the end. That was his first wish.
Well, if you were like 8 or 12 or however old he's supposed to be, then, you know, and all these bullies were chasing you through the streets and making you jump into trash cans, wouldn't that be, you know, if
so
you had to have a wish?
So that's completely imagined.
I think
so.
Yeah,
I mean...
And he never returned the book. He wrote the guy a note saying he'd return the book. He didn't. What's up with the creepy book guy that, like, smiles when the kid steals his book? And how did he possibly plan that the phone would ring?
The movie is also about petty theft. You didn't catch on to that? On how?
Well, is it?
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I mean, the essential...
But you're right. You know, it is kind of creepy how, you know, the guy kind of smiles and gives a...
Well...
Yeah.
And then you never see him again.
You never see him again. There's no payoff on that. Like, and he was sitting there reading that book. Mm-hmm. So... Was he reading the same stuff? Or did he just... Was it magic and he happened to know that Bastion would come in?
Well, that's sort of unclear, I guess. But at the time, I took it to mean that, you know, yes, he did kind of have a creepy petty smile going on. But he did... You know, Bastion came in and he ascertained that these bullies were beating up on him. And so I sort of interpreted it as, you know, he... saw that he needed some way to escape from his life and he needed to get into, you know, this world of imagination that was within the never-ending story.
I mean,
and so he gave him the book so that he could, you know, become empowered to stand up to the bullies and, you know, have a way to...
deal with his mom's passing?
Yeah, I mean, it was a way of escapism.
I don't hate the movie, mind you. I just... I don't know that I would have put this as like the best example of a journey or road trip movie. I mean, it's good. I think the effects are amazing. Like, I think the creature work and all that is really good. It's just, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a goofier movie to me. Like, I don't think the stuff in Fantasia is awesome. I kind of wish that was the movie.
And not go back to Bastion.
Because all the stuff in that school attic is ridiculous. It's absurd. Like, all the stuff they have up there.
Why is that school not making better use of that attic? I mean, that thing is huge.
But isn't that, I mean, seriously, like, what, he's got candles up there, he's opened this dorm. I mean, and how does, he stays up there like all day and does dad not look for him?
Yeah, and all like, night, there's, like, there's
yeah, there's no, there's no.
I don't understand.
There's no search party. The point is, like, for this kid.
At the beginning, his dad leaves for work and he's like, tells him not to be late for school. Why couldn't Sebastian just go back home and read the book? Bastion. I'm sorry. I keep calling Sebastian. So bad.
You got to take out the...
It's a crab versus a real boy. I get it. But why couldn't he just stay at home? Like, took the book back home. Why did he even go to school at all?
Well, he tried to go, and then remember there was a math test happening, and he was like, oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, but then he found the key to the attic and that smashed thing, and he goes upstairs.
So the lesson to be learned is it's okay to accept things from a creepy, petty... pedophile guy. Steal it. Break into the school attic. Skip school all day just because you don't want to take a math test. And
yep. And
deal with your problems.
And be detached from your dad. Just give him yes answers when he's trying to pour his heart out and talk to you. And
now I do have to say this: they made a never-ending story too. Which they did. I mean, I haven't seen that in two decades.
But I've seen it. Sure, I remember I saw it in theaters and everything else. And then they made a never-ending story 3.
Oh, they did.
And part 3 has Jack Black in it.
Are you serious?
I am serious, actually.
I did not know that. I mean, as you get from the title, they could make a never-ending story 50 and keep on going.
Well, I know because it just right, never it never ends. That's it's like
speaking about never-ending. It's good. Well, review is never ending. We need to move on.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I had so much more I wanted to say.
So what else would... If you were to pick Kelly, if you were the one that picked the Journey film, mm-hmm. what would you pick?
I think I probably would have picked The African Queen.
The African Queen?
To me, that's either The African Queen or It Happened One Night. Those are two, you know, just stone cold classics. They represent, you know, it's the class... You think of... you know, a journey movie or a road movie where they're learning something along the way. And, you know, at point A in the journey, they have one perspective on something. And then at point B in the journey, they have a totally different perspective. And to me, I think that's, you know, accomplished very well. You know, Katharine Hepburn, you know, she in the beginning of The African Queen, she is this crusty old missionary lady. And then towards the end, she becomes softened and you see how she really is. And of course, they fall in love and... You know, they have to encounter just a myriad of obstacles and leeches and terrible things and, you know, going down the river on this crickety old rickshaw, and it's a great movie.
What would you pick, Charles?
Like Kelly, I also had two movies I would have picked for it. One of the first things that came to my mind was Y Tu Mamá También. It's a great film that I feel like not many people have seen. Let alone heard of. I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where the title does intimidate people. They don't know what it means, they don't know what it's about, but it has all the characteristics of a great road trip movie. I mean, they actually get in a car and drive somewhere, and they don't even know where they're going. It's two best friends, and they're also going out with, or they're bringing along one of them's aunt, and she's an aunt by marriage, she's not directly blood related. They bring her along, and throughout the course of this journey, their friendship kind of spirals out of control. Like, they, by the end of it, they're like not even friends anymore, really. So that would have been one of my choices. The second choice, I would have also picked Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Classic.
That, I mean, the title alone, that is a road trip journey movie. It's one of my favorite Steve Martin movies. It probably is my favorite John Candy movie. There's so many quotes from that film, and it's just a great, great movie. Every single scene. And it has a lot of heart, too.
That's what I was about to say, because it's so profound.
I mean, because as annoying as John Candy's character can be in that film, like, he could turn around and do something that just, like, breaks your heart. And that's why it works. You know, there's the whole speech where, you know, when Steve Martin's finally had enough of him and he tells him off and he's like, "You want to hurt me? Go right ahead if it makes you feel better." And I love that. That speech just gets me every single time. So those would have been my picks.
Let's talk about my pick, my journey pick for bad movie.
Okay.
All right, let's do this.
My journey pick for bad movie is Into the Wild.
See, I thought that was going to go the complete opposite way.
You thought that would be my good?
I was so sure that you were going to say Into the Wild was your number one pick.
You like Into the Wild, Kelly?
Well, I had some thoughts about it, yes, but I'm not sure they were amazing thoughts, but I... Micah, let's
okay,
hear what you have to say.
So here's just my hang up with Into the Wild. Okay, at the beginning, we were talking about the journey film, and I said that it is where the protagonist encounters various challenges and characters which either aid to the resolution or aid to the conflict. Well, the problem with it is that this guy, the main character, Chris Candleless.
Yeah.
McCandless.
Yeah.
It's based on a true story, too. So, I mean, I don't want to disrespect this guy at all, you know, because of that. But I'm just talking solely about the film, is that he encounters all these people, and all these people, everybody that he encounters, consistently tries to aid to his resolution, does not bring him any conflict at all. He brings conflict to himself.
I completely agree.
And the thing is that he's so... doe-eyed the whole time, and he's just going, I'm gonna go to Alaska and I'm gonna live free, and all these people are going, no, we love you, stay here with us, you know, be with us, live. And you know, it just aggravates me the whole time, because this guy has no training, no experience. I mean, he may have, you know, pitched a tent on his backyard for all we know, you know, but he's gonna go out into the most brutal country in the world and just live off of free will and love. The whole time, every time that guy opened his mouth, I just wanted to punch myself in the face.
I know that I had the exact same impressions about it. I mean, as a movie, I thought it was really interesting. It was really well done. I mean, the soundtrack was really good. The cinematography was great. I thought it was really well acted, but I just did not like him as a protagonist. As you said, he was completely immovable in terms of, you know, personal growth.
And I think a lot of people actually, like, look at him as kind of a hero in a lot of ways.
Yes!
And that, like, I've heard that there's...
That's so frustrating.
He lived in a bus or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
It was
a
bus.
Magic bus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, the magic bus. And so, people go up, it's still there, and they can go visit it and all that. And
a memorial.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. Like,
well, he did. You got to give him his props, because he did. I mean, given everything that you just said, Micah, about how little training he had. I mean, what, like, on, you know, when he was in South Dakota, he read like two books on how to, you know, wield a firearm, and boom, boom. That, you know, now he's like a woodsman. But, he actually did accomplish a decent amount. I mean, he stayed alive in the wilderness and he held his own for quite a while.
To be fair, he did get a lot of experience with the people he met. I mean, they helped him out a lot and tell him how to do things and all that. Like, the, you know, so even Vince Vaughn shows up and tells him how to do something cool with corn.
Is that Galifianakis?
Yeah. Yeah. That was him, right?
That was him. Yeah. That was him.
Yeah. He's the guy that knows how to, everything about what, with the animals. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't know. It's like the guy is so ruined by his parents and the way his family was, but
didn't have to be. I mean,
it's not an excuse, really.
He seemed kind of a snob, though. I mean,
he was so pretentious.
He donated almost all the money he had in his account, but still left enough out so he could burn it. Like, what was the point? Why not donate it all? Like,
and then trashes his car.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes you're just ruined by your upbringing. I get that, but there were so many opportunities he could have fixed that. Mm-hmm. And at the end, like, it was his ignorance and choosing the wrong plant to eat that ultimately did him in and made him sick. But he wrote in the thing that, was it, happiness is only good when it's shared, or what did it say?
Come to his resolution. He comes to the, you know, where he figures out that life is not worth living, basically, if you don't live with others, or if you don't live with love. He comes to that, but it would have been a lot more satisfying if he came to it sooner than 2 minutes before the credits started rolling.
And that's what makes it a tragedy. I could understand that. And that's why I think the Hal Holbrook character, the older man that kind of takes him on, he's the most tragic in the thing. Because he wants to adopt him, his family lands on, and he really knows, I can't stop this kid from going. I can only help him. I mean, he really does. He even wakes up like 3 a.m, knows the guy's going to leave, and that's the saddest part, because he knows he's going to go.
I know, and to me, that was like the cherry on top of the horribleness of Emil Hirsch's character. That was the moment when I was like, I just can't stand you.
His character makes the movie, though, the Hal Holbrook, by the way. Without that character, I wouldn't have felt the connection to it. I really wouldn't.
Absolutely.
He does. I mean.
He was nominated for that.
He was a supporting actor. I think there was only two. It was best editing and best supporting actor. But, which surprised me, because I figured Eddie Vedder would be nominated for one of the songs that all sounded the same in that movie.
Let me just say, okay, so Hal Holbrook, and then the second best part was Eddie Vedder's songs, the music.
I liked him at first, but it was like the same over and over. I mean, he might as well have just been singing the whole movie while he's watching it, you know?
Yeah, but it didn't, I don't feel that really took away from it. I mean, well, it was...
It worked with the style of it, but it is like, it felt a little bit repetitive. You know, I mean, I know he wasn't singing Pearl Jam, but all I could picture was Hearts and Thoughts They Fade. You know, but
it'd be kind of inappropriate if Carol Miss.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying something different. Eddie Vedder is brilliant, and I felt like it was the same like tune throughout the movie with different words. He might as well have been narrating, is all I'm saying. That was my cue for Mike to start singing.
Oh, damn, he ate the wrong berries.
Yeah. See. Now, that movie, you would probably enjoy it a lot more,
right? Yes, I would love that movie. Actually, if they had dropped all dialogue and just had Eddie Vedder just narrate the whole thing.
But in a song, you know?
In song, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a movie worth watching, absolutely. Yep. Okay, so that was my worst pick. I was cringing the whole time, and I was shouting at the TV, almost like, you know,
But I just wonder, the people that do treat him as a hero, do they realize, do they look at it like, oh, he rejected society, you know, screw the man, all that stuff, or do they see it as a guy that realized he needed people, you know?
Yeah, I hope it's the latter.
I do too.
I kind of doubt that it is, though.
Yeah.
So
we're going to go over what everybody else's bad choices would be if you were to pick the Journey film. I'm going to go backwards. Charles?
A bad Journey film, Crossroads. The Britney Spears movie?
Britney Spears,
you stole mine.
That's yours too?
Yes, that's the exact movie I would have chosen.
And I'll be honest on this movie.
She wanted to meet her mama or meet her daddy?
Her mama. Dan Aykroyd played her dad, and he's the one that raised her. Kim Cattrall is her mom in the movie, but she doesn't know. It's one of those movies that I will say I've watched it all the way through, and I believe I have, Scout's Honor, but I think it used to play on Showtime quite a bit, and I've seen it in segments. I don't know that I've watched it in one sitting, but I hate it nonetheless. I think everybody that was a teenager at the time when Baby Hit Me One More Time came out appreciated Britney Spears in various ways.
But
Kelly, come on, back me up on this. That was gonna be your pick too.
No, I completely agree. I think that's extremely hilarious, actually, of all the movies that exist and all the road trip movies that exist. But, I mean, that is truly
terrible.
What other
bad road trip movies are there? I mean, I was having a hard time thinking of really, really terrible ones. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the ugly pick for today with the Journey film. My ugly pick, I actually had one, and then Charles reminded me of another one, and so without telling him, I changed it. My ugly pick was from 1994, the gemstone of 1994, The Chase.
It was truly a gem, let me just say.
The ugly pick is basically one that it's either ridiculous, it's poorly put together, could be poorly acted, maybe just the cinematography is horrible, or it's just flat out stupid, but by God, you love it. you watch it and you go, ah, this movie is so dumb, but I love it.
So bad, it's good.
The Chase is my pick. So The Chase is about a young man named Jack, which let me go ahead and say that in 1994, 93, 95, around there, they love their protagonist named Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, every male character, his name was Jack. Think about Keanu Reeves in Speed, was named Jack. In fact, Francis Ford Coppola made an entire movie called Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they loved the name Jack then. That's
true.
By a random event, he steals a car from a young heiress named Natalie Voss. And so he...
And she's played by who?
And she is played by Christy Swanson.
Yes, she is.
Who I remember is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I was just going to say that. I was hoping you would first.
So so they go riding off, and a chase through the streets of L.A. ensues, and it just becomes more and more and more ridiculous as it goes on. And their relationship becomes more and more ridiculous.
It does.
And it, of course, culminates in probably the most famous scene from the chase, which would be the most...
The 80-mile-an-hour sex scene.
Yeah, it was...
The most extreme version of Stockholm Syndrome ever.
Eyes are totally not even on the road anymore.
I know.
Just minutes
but they shot
by.
It like fantasy-like, like everything kind of speeding by.
So it's ridiculous to the nth. I mean, all the characters are ridiculous. The characters' backstories, the character development is just ridiculous.
Did we mention Charlie
bloated.
Sheen? Huh? Did we mention Charlie Sheen yet? I don't know if I've heard his name.
Oh, we haven't said the name.
Charlie Sheen plays Jack.
Charlie Sheen plays Jack.
That has
yes.
to tell you something.
So yeah, I was about to bring that up. It's kind of a premonition to how over the top Charlie Sheen was going to turn out, because he's just his character is just completely ridiculous in this, and yeah, it's Charlie Sheen too, which is great.
But he's at his peak. I mean, he's
yeah,
he's
oh, yeah.
cool.
This was,
this was after
Platoon.
Yeah,
after
still young, still in his
20s.
He's a, I mean, he's a cool looking guy. You know,
yeah.
I like
yeah.
Charlie Sheen a lot at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody did.
Yeah,
and of course you got some incredible cameos in there. You got I can never say his name right, but Cary Elwes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, Robin Hood.
Huh?
Played Robin Hood.
Yeah, played...
And Princess and the Bride.
And that's where you
or,
remember
not Princess
from
and the Bride, the Princess Bride.
Let's see, you also have... of course, my favorite cameo probably of all time is Anthony Kiedis in Flea. Just come out of nowhere yes. on this monster
that's
truck.
That's like redneck drivers.
Oh, it's just beyond ridiculous.
I mean, it's basically a parody of like how the media sensationalizes things.
Because, yeah, because that was right yes. after the OJ.
Right, and he doesn't know that he kidnapped. He's wrongfully accused, and he doesn't know that he kidnapped
uh-huh.
a famous person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they all assume he did, and they start making up backstories and all of that. And then they're chasing him with helicopters and cars, and you got cops. Henry Rollins is like the cop on him, and
yes,
and they're filming an episode of Cops or documentary, and they're in the car with him. So,
well, I'll be honest. I think I did enjoy watching it probably the most of all three movies, but it was quite terrible. It does fall under the awesomely bad category.
I mean, it's not a great movie, but I would put it on the good list in some way. Like, you know, I mean, right. I mean,
no,
you enjoy watching it.
It's entertaining. It's
it
extremely
is.
It's very
entertaining,
but it's like it's basically like Anchorman 2 was a critique of 24-hour news.
Yeah.
But it failed. It's just terrible because it wasn't that great of a movie. This is
media.
A critique of media sensationalizing everything,
right.
and I think it really works well on that level.
But the thing is though, it while I was watching it, I did not quite know whether it was supposed to be funny, or whether it was just really.
No, I was laughing
bad.
The whole time. I could watch that movie anytime and just really enjoy it. In fact, it used to come on HBO like every day, and I remember I probably watched it every single time it aired. I really do like that movie a lot. I figure it does probably belong where you put it. Although I wish it could be on the good list because I do think it's a great movie. It's just not as good as, like, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or any other ones we want to mention. I mean, I'll be honest, though, I probably like it more than Neverending Story. Neverending Story, like I said, Neverending Story is a great movie, and I probably liked it when I was a kid, but as you go back and watch it now, and it's so goofy. It's like in Family Guy when Peter was riding Falcor, and he's like, Peter, our kid. He's like, yeah. And he just rides it into the ground. So...
Kelly, what would what would be your ugly pick?
Oh, I'm gonna have to say River of No Return. Nice. Charles and I watched this movie a while back, and I had seen it numerous times, I'm ashamed to say, before that, but...
You own it.
I do own it because, you know, I just, there's, I mean, it's like you said with The Chase, there are so many horrifying things about it, and so, like, it's not a great feat of movie making by any stretch of the imagination.
No, just to clarify, this is with Marilyn Monroe?
Yes, okay. Yes, Marilyn Monroe and Robert Mitchum. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it, Micah?
No.
It's glorious. It is. It's very bad, but it's also very good.
Now we come to the section of our podcast that I like to call Snap Judgment.
I like to call it Micah gets close to the microphone.
Micah gets just a little closer to the microphone because it's intimate.
And the crazy thing is you can't hear any better.
So for Snap Judgment, what we do here is that we're going to take our three picks and we're going to spend 30 seconds for each pick. And we're going to randomly choose somebody that I'm going to torture with IMDb. And I'm going to say a name, whether it is an actor or the director or cinematographer, whatever it may be. And I'm going to make that person tell me if they think that that person is good for the movie, bad for the movie, or just plain ugly for the movie. Okay, so Charles, I pick you. And let's start with The Neverending Story. Wolfgang Peterson.
I think he's great for it. Das Boot also took place in a very confined space, although I like that movie a lot more. So I think he deals well with that.
Noah Hathaway played Atreyu.
He didn't get nominated for acting or anything, but I think he was really good in the movie. I actually saw a picture of him recently. He's like covered in tattoos and his short hair. He's in his 40s now. Completely different guy now.
Deep Roy played Teeny Weenie.
Who's Teeny Weenie?
What about the horse?
Oh, the horse is fantastic. That's the saddest part of the movie.
Stop. He's the guy at the very beginning that rides the snail, the racing snail.
His name is Teeny Weenie?
The character's name is Teeny Weenie. His name is
Do they
Deep
say
Roy.
That in the movie?
He was the Oompa Loompa in Tim Burton's Willy Wonka.
The guy they cloned for like...
Yeah, I thought he did great. It's Teeny Weenie. His voice was actually dubbed that whole time. All right, Into the Wild. Ready?
This is for me or for Kelly?
That's for you. Well, okay, we'll do Kelly.
All right, doesn't matter. I mean...
All right. Ready? Into the Wild. Emil Hirsch. Good, Bad, Ugly.
I think his acting was really good.
Okay.
His character was terrible.
Kristen Stewart played Tracy Tatro.
Oh, I'm going to say she was basically Bella from Twilight again in this movie. So read into that what you will.
Sean Penn as a director.
Good. I'd say good.
No other... thoughts behind this?
No, I mean, like I said before, I mean, I thought it was a well-made movie. I think he had, you know, a decent vision for it. I just didn't like the character.
Got it.
Was Kristen Stewart actually singing in that movie?
It sounded like her.
She was really good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounded like her voice.
The Chase. Are you ready, Charles? Director Adam Rifkin.
What else has he done? Like, I'm not even that much familiar with his work. I mean, I think he did well on The Chase, though. He kept it cohesive and... I think it was right on the money as far as the satire.
He also did Small Soldiers and Underdog. Charlie Sheen, actor.
Fantastic in this movie. It's one of his better roles. I mean, honestly, he was on kind of a hot streak there. This is right after Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part 2.
Yeah.
Duh. Yeah, whatever.
Anthony Kiedis and Flea, cameo.
I love their cameo. It's the goofiest thing in the movie, especially that big van. Don't they flip it and it explodes?
Yep.
And...
Yep. You can't forget the time when the cadavers all spilled out of the medical student van
onto
the highway.
Which Michael Bay ripped off in Bad Boys 2, if you remember that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, so, I don't know, maybe that's something before, but I want to say the Chase originated that.
That is our podcast. That is our Journey podcast. Very appropriate that we started with Journey, because we are entering this journey. Next week is Kelly's pick. And Kelly, what is the genre?
Okay, next week the genre is film noir.
Film noir. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us our picks now?
Yeah,
or
sure.
Our movies?
Sure.
Don't say if they're good, bad, or ugly. Just tell us.
Okay, in no particular order, let's see. We're going to do Kiss Me Deadly from 1955, starring Ralph Meeker. Double Indemnity from 1944, starring Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck. And Niagara from 1953, starring Marilyn Monroe and Joseph Cotten.
Niagara?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Wait, when did Viagra come out? I thought that was...
I'm kicking you. I'm kicking
okay.
you.
Marilyn Monroe was the original. So, tell us if you agree or if you disagree with our list. Do you think that our list of the good, the Neverending Story, the African Queen, Itu Mama Tambien, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, do you think that those are the best? Do you have another suggestion? Let us know. What about the bad? Got Into the Wild was my pick, and then Crossroads. Do you love Crossroads? Are you a Britney Spears fan?
And are you like me where you're torn between The Chase being an ugly movie and a great movie? I mean, I really, it could go either way for me.
And then Ugly Pick. If you think that The Chase or A River of No Return were Oscar bound, then let us know. Please comment below and like us on Facebook, or you can come visit us at itsjustawesome.com.
Itsjustawesome.com or Good Bad Podcast. I guess the appropriate would be at Good Bad Podcast for the Twitter.
All right.
People out there. I sound I'm a clueless on social media.
It's our first episode. Give us a break.
Well, yeah, but I'm clueless on social media, apparently. It's not a hashtag. It's at Good Bad Podcast or itsjustawesome.com. And that's not awesome.com. It's just awesome.com.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.
All right.